Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. I'm Max Flight, and this is a special edition recorded live at the Sun and Fun International Fly-In and Expo on April 3rd, 2019. It aired on AM 1510 in Lakeland, Florida, and on liveatc.net. Now, Sun and Fun is an annual week-long gathering of lovers of aviation, and it features daily air shows, seminars, manufacturer exhibits, vendors, food, fun, and friendship. You'll be hearing more about this amazing event in some upcoming episodes. Visit the Sun and Fun website at flysnf.org and listen to all the programming from Sun and Fun Radio throughout the year at liveatc.net/snf. But for now, let's listen to our first ever live show. I was joined on the deck of the Sun and Fun radio station by Max Trescott, Airplane Geeks reporter at large Launchpad Merzari, and Rob Mark. Thank you so much. We're so happy to be here at Sun and Fun, and we're especially happy to be here on Sun and Fun Radio for our first time. We're very excited. We're the Airplane Geeks podcast. The way we open our shows always, we describe that we're here to educate and inform you, to expand your passion for aviation, and to have a little fun along the way.
I think you should just say we're going to expand your mind. Wouldn't that be more efficient?
Blow your mind.
It's going to blow your mind.
It's going to blow your
mind. Nobody even knows what that means.
All right. All right. Well, let me introduce our group here. We'll start out with Max Trescott. He's the host of Aviation News Talk podcast. He is the 2008 CFI of the year, and he's an expert on the Cirrus aircraft. So we have two Maxes. Max, how are you?
Max Flight. I can't tell you how much fun it is to be here across the table with you. We have done several hundred episodes together of Airplane Geeks. Now, you've been on it for, close to 10 or 11 years?
Almost 11 years. Started in 2008.
And I'm coming up over 5 years at this point, a couple hundred episodes. But most of them, we are talking Skype to Skype. But this is a special treat to be here, enjoying this nice cool breeze on the deck of SNF Radio. So wonderful to be here with you.
Yes, and I'm not sure if this is going to be the same sort of thing where we can see each other's facial expressions, because when we're normally doing this on Skype, you have no idea if the other guys are laughing or crying or
eating,
moaning, yes, or whatever.
We building model airplanes.
Yes, well, that we do have that.
Yes, actually, we always hear from David that he's eating, and we fortunately can't watch that.
So. That's right. Yes, and we'll take the opportunity to mention our other co-host, David Vanderhoof, who is our aviation historian, who's not here at Sun and Fun this year. We'll have to drag him down. Maybe next year we can do that. But also, let me introduce Launchpad Merzari. He's our Airplane Geeks reporter at large. And this is the first time we've ever seen each other face to face.
This is the first time I've ever seen you. I've met Max up at that air show up north, and I've seen Rob's poster all over the place at the post office and other FBI interviews. But it's the first time you and I have ever met.
That's right. That's what happens with this podcasting thing. And so, of course, the Rob is Rob Mark. He's the senior editor of Flying Magazine, at least last time I checked.
Yeah, almost the end of the show for me, but I'm still employed. It's a good, kind of just checking it out.
That's good. Well, Rob provides many of the outtakes. If you listen to our show, we generally...
And I'm not even trying.
That's what makes them so good. But they're at the end of the show. We've actually had some listeners who write into us and say they start at the back with the outtakes before they get into the regular part of the show. So.
Did you know what happens if you play some of the outtakes with me backwards?
John Lennon is dead. No.
Yes. Oh, you've heard?
I was just a lucky guess.
Okay.
All right. Well, as you can tell, we're all different. We have different backgrounds, different experiences. Some are interested in general aviation. I'm more historically of a commercial aviation guy. Our friend David Vanderhoof is more of a military aviation guy. And that's one of the things that we like about this show is that we can look at all aspects of aviation and make them interesting and the other guys on the show won't know if you're right or not, you know.
I don't think I ever thought of the strategy quite like that, but that's very good. Yeah, I like that.
But to be fair, I mean, we've had a lot of expertise among the different hosts, and it's great. It's amazing the number of topics that we can talk about and actually be relatively knowledgeable about. Now, every once in a while, we'll get feedback where someone will go, hey, you know, you got this one not quite right. But on the whole, yeah, I think we're providing a good service and providing a perspective from folks who've collectively been in aviation for, I won't say how many hundreds of years together.
Several. Yes.
Several, yeah.
And, of course, our listeners will correct us if we get anything wrong. We've got a really engaged group of listeners, and a large group, too. It's really kind of gratifying. And it's a weekly podcast. We run about 90 minutes each week, which some people tell us that's too long, and just as many people tell us that we need to make it longer. So we'll try to stay somewhat.
That's about right.
Somewhat in the middle.
We did a survey once, I think, and it came up with some of this and some of that.
Yeah. Yes, and it was interesting to see what our listenership did in terms of aviation. We asked how many are pilots, how many are not pilots but would like to be a pilot, and then how many are not. And between the group that was already a pilot and those that wanted to become a pilot, that was probably about 2/3 of the audience. So that's pretty interesting and gratifying.
You know, I just wanted to mention one thing. When this guy over here, nobody can see, I'm pointing at Max Trescott. Yeah. He said he's been around for, you've been doing this 5 years, I think?
Yeah, coming up on 6, I think.
Well, I was around at episode 54, mm-hmm. and when did I leave? I think at episode 500?
Something around there.
Yeah, so you got a long way to go, buddy. Let me tell you. You're not even worn out yet, so you're just getting broken in.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I started listening at episode 76.
Wow. That is impressive.
And the thing that I'm always amazed at is the number of people that will go back and say, yeah, and I'm starting to listen from the beginning. I mean, it's really remarkable. There are people that will go back years and years and years and listen to all of the episodes. And that really, I think, tells you that, you know, a lot of the content is timeless and that there's still a lot of good information and people really enjoy listening to it. Now, you're talking about 90 minutes and some people think that's too long, probably because their commute to work is less than 30 minutes. But I don't think people realize, you know, you don't have to listen to the entire thing on, you know, one drive in the car. You know, you could listen to a third of it and then another third or, you know, whatever you want. So that's the nice thing about podcasts is being able to start and stop them whenever you want and pick up where you left off.
That's right. And they're easy to listen to these days. You typically just get a podcast app and for Android or for iOS or whatever. Of course, you can always listen on the web page, but very few people do that. Most people are streaming them now with their smartphones, and it's just very easy to do. The hardest part about it is almost deciding which podcast you're going to subscribe to, because it's easy to get carried away and you end up with so many and it's hard to keep up, and then you feel guilty because you're not listening to each episode. So.
More than 200 aviation podcasts available now. It's really quite remarkable.
Wow. And every one of them is different. Yeah. You know, every one of them is different. As Dave Schellbetter said, each has their own unique flavor and experiences of the host or hosts. It's really great.
And you said they stream them, streaming.
Yes,
I thought you guys were saying they're screaming.
sometimes they are.
I did not realize. See, I would never have known that if we hadn't been here all together looking at each other.
Do you understand streaming, Rob?
I do now. Okay. I understand the difference between streaming and screaming.
Okay.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
Well, she's the Hollywood girl, so she knows everything.
Yes. Yeah, she works in the industry.
That's right. So.
All right. Well, hey, let's talk a little bit about Sun and Fun, because we're all coming at this from kind of different perspectives. In my case, this is the first time I've been to Sun and Fun. And I have to tell you, Rob, I really wish you'd, you know, spent more energy and effort over the years convincing me to come here.
Well, it's funny. I do think there were times that we would say, Max, are you coming to Oshkosh this year? Well, no, and I know you had some issues that kind of made it hard, and But, you know, when you get into one of these things and it's the first time you've been to one,
yeah,
you go, wow, where do I start? There are just so many things to see, lots of people to talk to, many of whom you may never have met before, lots of forums. And then on top of it, there are people peddling things. They're trying to get you to buy all kinds of cool things.
Cool stuff, yeah. One of the things that I really liked right off the bat when I arrived yesterday on Monday was just seeing the airplanes that I'd either only seen photographs of or had never seen before or had heard of. And it was just kind of, you know, one after another. You know, there's a Sonics, there's, you know, there's this, there's that, you know, there's the huge variety. So, I mean, that was kind of my first impression. And actually, the first thing I did when I got here, what I was doing was looking for Launchpad.
Yeah, and for our listeners, yeah, he had to come find. I had to give him instructions on how to. I was like, okay, if you're at the F-14, now take a left and keep going.
Yeah,
you know. And for our listeners, what's different about who haven't had the great pleasure of being at Sun and Fun? It's a different environment entirely because, like your local air show, the Detroit River Show, or Thunder Over the Valley, or Fleet Week. There is that portion where there is an active air show from 2 to 5:30 every day. That's just like the great air shows you see out there. In fact, we've got the F-16. We've got the Thunderbirds are coming this week. The Blue Angels are coming this weekend. And we've got some of the other great air performers. But then, like a trade show or a car show, there's people selling airplanes.
Yeah.
And then, also, a little bit deeper than a car show, there's people selling things for airplanes, you know, headsets and things for owners and operators, and in airplane insurance and airplane financing and airplane training. And then you go one more level, and now suddenly it's like a convention because there are classrooms and seminars going on. And it's all of that going on at the same time for 5 days.
Yeah, yeah. The breadth of the experience, types of experience you could have here is pretty amazing. I think maybe different people come for perhaps different reasons. Max Trescott, you've been here. How many times have you been to Sun and Fun?
I took a gap of probably 5 or 6 years, but I must have come for at least 3 or 4 years prior to that. I'll tell you what I see when I come to Sun and Fun. What I see is a lot of folks from up north who are just desperate to get away from the cold and the snow. And I think that's why somebody's raising their hand in the background here. Yeah. I think that's why it's called Sun in Fun. Yeah. And actually, it's kind of funny because, you know, I live in California, and we've had a very gray winter. So, in fact, my wife is back home right now and telling me how much it's been raining this week. So, you know, it is always kind of fun to actually get here and go, hey, you can wear shorts if you want. And it's kind of that first breath of fresh air where you go, hey, spring is actually around the corner. There is hope. I can go out there and fly and have some fun and not be, stuck indoors worrying about the snow.
Yeah.
Well, having gone through the polar vortex this year up in Chicago where it was 25 below zero actual temperature Fahrenheit, when I told Nancy that I had to go to Sun and Fun for work, all I heard was, oh, yeah, sure, it's going to be work. Yeah, I bet you're going to really be tired sitting out there in the sun. And
But it is a job. It's a magazine. So
expand on that, because for you, it's just another day at work covering press releases and, you know, news items.
That's right. And I mean, what we do, I mean, I got here on Sunday to do some other flying I'll tell you guys about later. But essentially, the first day of the show is press day. And anybody that has a new product, a new service, anything that's going on, they want all the press to be in one place within half a day or so, and they schedule the conferences so we can come and hear the pitch and decide, yeah, that's a good story, or it's not really that interesting, because they all want to be in flying or AOPA pilot or plane and pilot or general aviation news or whatever. This year the big event on opening day Tuesday was that Piper announced two new training airplanes, sort of lower, what do they call it, higher value versions of the Piper Archer. Not a four-place anymore. It'll be a two-place trainer in these new versions. But Piper announced so many orders for new airplanes that it's just absolutely amazing. Hundreds and hundreds. I forgot. I think they said their backup, or I'm sorry, I think their backlog is something like 600 or 700 airplanes, which for a GA manufacturer
is unheard of.
Quite a bit.
Well, and they just put out an announcement today. So the big announcement was yesterday. Today they put out a separate press release saying that they'd had an order for 240 new aircraft.
Was that from L3?
Yes, it was. And so now that includes air deliveries over some period of time and options and stuff like that. So it's not like they're going to all ship them this year. But that is a monster order in general aviation. I've never heard of an order that big.
No, but again, flight training is just
booming.
Really booming. I mean,
exactly.
If you go, we've heard for years that, the number of people getting a student pilot's license is way down. And I just wrote something about this for Flying last month. And if you compare the number of student starts now to what it was 10 years ago, it's probably up close to threefold.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It is. Now, I don't claim you'd have to go over there to AOPA and find out how many of them are actually finishing, but I think a lot of them are because of the people that want to be career pilots now, and they're coming from all over. And these starts would include people coming from other countries, because I would imagine they have to get a student pilot license or certificate here, right?
They would. They'd have to get a U.S. license, and then they would go through a conversion process to use that license in their home country. But several of us were sitting in the AOPA town hall meeting this afternoon, and they did show some of those statistics. And sure enough, there has been an uptick. You can actually see the line is starting to head back up again in terms of total pilots. So I think that we are at a bit of an inflection point here. I think people recognize that airlines are hiring like crazy, and there has never really been, I think, a better time in the history of aviation to get into it as a pilot. So yeah, a lot of people are being attracted to starting becoming a pilot right now.
And wouldn't you know, I'm too old to do that.
Yeah, but you've already done it.
Well, I know, but I'd like to do it again.
Oh, why not? I can see that.
It was fun. You know, you walk around in this cool shirt with little stripes on your shoulders.
You like those stripes, huh?
And you, you taxi in, and you just kind of wave to the people on the side as you're taxiing
Why don't we do something new? Why don't you just decide to start an airline? Max here will supply the engines.
There we go.
Well, I think we could get some airplanes from WOW pretty cheaply.
Oh, dear, yeah.
The Icelandic carrier that went belly up. In fact, I think they had 787s, if I'm not mistaken, didn't they?
I think they did have some, yes. In the A320 families. In fact, when I drove down here from Connecticut, believe it or not, when I passed Newark Airport, there was this nice, shiny, pretty, A320 parked as far away from the terminal area as possible. In fact, it was right up against the fence next to the New Jersey Turnpike. So yeah.
I wonder if that was the other airline pushing it away like it has the plague. Like maybe it'll rub off, put it way over there.
Well, and the long-haul discount airlines are, I think, really starting to show some of the cracks in their business models. Norwegian has just dropped a number of their aircraft. In fact, I was in the FAA office here yesterday getting some paperwork done, and there was a pilot who had been at a local base that Norwegian had, which has been closed. And so he's now been trying to find a job here in the United States. And we've been working on a guest to come on soon who used to run a discount airline. And he has contended for a long time. Discount works well, you know, within the States, but a lot of the cost savings when you fly long haul are just not there. So
Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned getting a guest on the show. That's something maybe we could just quickly mention, is that most every episode features an industry guest, usually a prominent guest.
What, we're not prominent?
we don't have a Wikipedia page.
Oh, well, can we work on that?
We used to.
Did you really? I didn't think I ever saw that.
That was years ago. Yeah, I stumbled across. I guess I was doing like a vanity search, you know, for airplane geeks. And this Wikipedia page came up. And I went, wow.
That's funny.
That's pretty, you know, ego boosting.
We've made it.
But now it's gone?
Yeah, it lasted about 6 months. And then Wikipedia took it down for being not enough notoriety or something like that.
Oh, I thought you were going to say because it was adult.
They didn't know Rob was on the show, apparently.
yeah. So if anybody listening wants to,
start up another...
Yeah.
Wikipedia deemed it as fake news.
Yeah, no. So, but yeah, on guests, I mean, we, as an example, talking about Wow Air, we had Skooli Mogensen on.
That's
the
right.
Yeah, the CEO.
The CEO of Wow Air. Yep, he was on a couple of years ago. So, Rob, I'm just you talked about kind of the big story, I think, which was Piper. Any other maybe smaller stories that you've run into while you're here?
Well, I think that when we don't have news releases that particularly grab us, I think what I was doing the last few days works is we just wander around and I look at things and I go, oh, that's an interesting airplane over there, or gee, I wonder what that company does, and I'll just wander up and say, what do you guys do? And let somebody kind of explain the product or the service. And sometimes I go, well, it's not really that big a deal. But then every so often, maybe two out of four, you go, that's a really interesting story. Or the way they are using something that we all kind of take for granted. And that's how you do it. Either they tell us about it or we go out and do the detective work and hopefully try and make it interesting to readers.
Now, you said, Rob, you said wander up, but what you really meant was you drive up in your own golf cart, right? Rob, where is your golf cart, Rob? I don't see it right now.
Well, we had a little conflict this afternoon on the flying golf carts because they left me a golf cart with no key. So I think I know whose pocket it's in, but I won't mention that man's name because I work for him. So
wise move.
So it was okay. The exercise was good.
I'm sure. Yes, yes.
No, we had a serendipitous moment with that golf cart. We had all agreed to meet for lunch. And I was hustling to get back here because I hadn't seen any of you folks yet. And a golf cart went flying by and stopped briefly, and I was behind it. And I said, hey, can I have a ride? And Rob looked around and said yes, and then did a double take. I said, oh,
yeah, because I didn't even realize it was Max. He just hopped on, and I went, oh, Max, it's you.
And that's the funny thing. I didn't realize it was you either. I was just kind of flagging down a speeding golf cart for a ride so that I would get here in time, and we both arrived at exactly the same moment.
Well, and it was funny up until the point that we parked out here, and then I turned around and said, that'll be $28.50, and he just wasn't having any of that.
Yeah, yeah. Now with Launchpad, now you're here in a different capacity from all the rest of us.
Right. I'm here with Pipistrel Aircraft as a vendor. So for where Rob is work, I'm work also. And for us, it's a case of you come in early pre-show, you've done a lot of homework of the logistics of getting your airplanes here, of reading the NOTAMs and figuring out, and then having a crew on the ground to receive the airplanes, put them into your booth, and what you have to do is tack them down. Then the other thing that people don't realize is you have to go through a great deal of safing the airplanes.
So give us some examples of how you would safe an airplane that you flew in.
Ours has BRS parachutes, so we zip tie the handle in and the safety ring in so that nobody can accidentally pull it. I pull the battery. We have an emergency disconnect on the batteries. We pull that so that nobody can accidentally turn prop. We take the keys and make sure we own the keys out of them. We'll also, depending on if they've got ELTs, we'll disable the ELTs in them.
Oh, yes.
So that they don't get bumped off, because what we're the two things we're worried about is a physical safety thing. Also, we'll drain, if they come in fat, and by that I mean with lots of fuel, we'll drain fuel out of them because we don't want them to the fuel to expand and drip over while you're in the booth. And so we'll safe the airplane that way so that nothing can happen. You know, we can't have, because all you need is an inadvertent switch pop and somebody, you know, turns prop or pulls a parachute. Oh, geez.
Yeah, that would be a mess.
And so you safe the airplane that way. And then tie it down to, you know, and then you've got to put up all the accoutrements, you know, the feather flags, the banner flags, the get your tent up. And then, you know, make sure you've got your brochures for that are current for this year and not last year's brochures. Have the get your pricing down so everybody's quoting the same price.
Yeah, that's important.
And then figure out what the sale. There's always a bonus for committing to buy during the air show. Because of course we want to do, you know, we want to do air show pricing. We want you to commit while you're there.
Yes.
And you want to be all this all put together on the night before, because moving an aircraft or having to set up your booth at 8 o'clock in the morning when there are customers coming in is just a major pain in the empennage.
Yeah.
But setting up a booth anyway is a pain. It's a lot of work, and especially because are the airplanes flown in or are
yes.
they crated in?
Okay. No, we fly in all our
And how many did you bring in this year?
Three.
Oh, three.
Now,
three.
Where did they come from?
There are dealer aircraft, and one of them was we brought it in. So our Florida dealer brought one in. Our Ohio dealer brought one in. We're bringing back, if you will, a lease back from a customer who's up in Georgia. We're bringing his aircraft in. And then we've got a customer who's taking brand new delivery of his airplane at the show. It's only got 4 hours on it. It has that new car smell. It's so cool.
All right. So stop teasing us. Tell people a little bit more about the Cenas, because it's one heck of an aircraft. So just go ahead.
Well, okay. The Cenas aircraft, what's cool about it is it's an LSA glider, or it's an LSA, but it can be licensed as a glider, and 80% of our customers license it as a glider. And the cool part about a glider is there's no medical. In fact, you know, as we jokingly say, the dead can fly a glider. They can vote in Chicago.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
It's a, you know, we're talking a small two-seat LSA airplane that has a 27-to-1 glide ratio, and yet still cruises at 110 knots at 3.3 gallons per hour. And if you do the inverse math for the non-pilots to impress them, that's, you know, 123 miles an hour at 55 miles to the gallon.
Well, and let's
stick that up your Prius.
Yeah, yeah, and let's... How did you know I drive one, actually? but let's just kind of compare that for folks that might not be familiar with, you know, how to relate some of those numbers. You said a 27-to-1 glide ratio. For example, typical Cessna 172, 7-to-1 glide ratio. So if you're up 1 mile, which would be 6,000 feet for nautical miles, you could glide 7 miles. You could glide 27 miles. And just by comparison, the Cirrus Vision jet that I've been flying these days, 12-to-1 glide ratio. Still
that's
pretty darn good.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Really? That's pretty good. I didn't think it'd be that high.
I didn't either, but I'm happy it is. When I was up in the Cenas today flying with your test pilot, at one point we had the engine feathered and engine turned completely off, and we were at initially about 4,000 feet, and we were looking at Lakeland Airport, which is probably, I don't know, 10 miles away, and he goes, oh, yeah, we could make it from there. And I'm like, You are got to be, because I'm looking almost straight forward at the horizon. Yeah. You know, usually when you fly an airplane, you're looking down. Or if the seaplane that I used to have, you'd be looking behind you. You know, has a negative glide ratio. That's where it's going to land if the engine quits.
Yeah, and it just sips fuel. It's got 40 pounds of baggage and a usable weight up in the real close to 500, about 480, depending on what you're putting in the panel, and it comes with a BRS parachute, just like a certain really cool jet.
Indeed. I'll just take a quick detour here and talk about Aviation News Talk podcast. The current episode 103 was an interview with Ed Regensburg, who people saw on the news about a month ago when he had an engine failure over the Caribbean, and he ended up pulling the parachute, getting rescued ultimately by a cruise ship, and you know, being brought home. And I think that's just a great example of, I think for years a lot of people have poo-pooed the parachutes. Oh, real pilots, you know, don't need them. Well, in this particular case, and actually it's been the case with every Cirrus that's gone down over water, the parachute stayed inflated, helping to actually keep the airplane afloat. That thing stayed on top of the water for 20 minutes. Usually an airplane hits the water and it's probably gone in 5 minutes.
Well, and real quick, as we're getting ready, is that plane you're in just flew the Caribbean route. Hmm. It went all the way down to Tobago.
Yeah.
And in that flight, two different things. He cruised down at 9,000 feet. There was only 15 minutes in that flight that he was out. He was true blue water ops because of his glide ratio from being at 9,000 feet.
Whoa.
He was at 9,000 when the engine... It was SR-22,
oh, no,
wasn't
it? Two different stories. He's just switched back to talking about the Pipistrel.
Oh, okay.
The Pipistrel, our Pipistrel, the plane I put him in today, had just come back from flying a Caribbean rally.
All the way down to Tobago, as I recall.
Right.
That's a long drive.
Like almost it's way down to Venezuela.
I've got 27 gallons at 3.3 gallons per hour. That gives me close to a seven-hour, you know... You don't have a seven-hour bladder, Rob.
No, you're right. I mean, and as you said, Tobago's a lot. I mean, I remember taking the Hawker down there out of Fort Lauderdale, and I thought it took us a long time in the jet at, I don't know, 35,000 feet. But that many hours
amazing. You said, with the glide ratio, it only put us, for blue water ops, about 15 minutes.
Flying is fun, but you don't want to do it for 7 hours straight.
No.
All right, well, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back in just a few minutes. And we're back, and you're listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast on Sun and Fun Radio.
Maybe this should be the Airplane Geeks South.
Ooh, I like that. We don't have one, do we?
No.
Oh, no, live.
the Airplane Geeks South podcast.
Live.
Yeah, I like that.
No, the live part's pretty good. I like the live part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, if you're listening to it and it's recording, it doesn't sound live, but... Semantics.
Use your imagination.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we should do this every week. That's what I think.
You mean come down to Sun and Fun?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I'm all for it.
Yeah. I don't think they're here all the time, Max. I think it's just certain times of the day and certain times of the year.
Yeah. Maybe they'd open it up for us.
You know, we're actually quite lucky that we're doing this today because tomorrow the Blue Angels arrive at Sun and Fun.
Nice. Can't wait.
They'll get really loud.
Can't wait. You know, we were talking about the Pipistrel motor glider. Right? That's technically a motor glider. Max Trescott went for a flight in that, as did I. I've only been in a few small airplanes, right, being a commercial aviation guy and less so a general aviation guy. So it was a really interesting and different experience. I'd been in a glider once before maybe 10 years ago or something. In fact, that was an aerobatic glider ride.
Yeah, but you didn't get to sit up in that one. You had to lay down practically.
That's right. This was really interesting. The glider ride I'd been on before, there was a tow plane that went up. But, of course, this has an engine on it. So, you know, we take off like a real airplane, if you want to call it that. And then you get to the point where the pilot turns off the engine. And, you know, that's a little kind of an interesting experience for someone like me who's... Yep.
We don't do that in the jet. No.
No, you don't do that in the jet. No. I wouldn't think so. But, you know, gliding is such a... It's a wonderful experience because, you know, you're just... Well, you're gliding, right? You're not under
Did you take your headset off?
No, I should have.
It's totally silent.
Yes. So... And I think I did pretty well, too. Did you get a chance to talk to the pilot afterwards?
Because he told me. Yeah, he actually said you did really well.
Yeah, I think he didn't believe me when I said I'd only been in a couple of small airplanes before.
And your landing was great.
No, I didn't land it. No way. He did do a sort of a, well, I would call it high G. It was a 2G.
It was a wing over.
A wing over. 2G wing over. 2G wing over. And after he gave me controls... The only thing that made me nervous about that was that he was going to have me do that wing over. And I would have not done that. I wasn't ready for that.
And you did that with power off, by the way, that wing over, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, with power off. Yeah. So it was a great experience for me. I think a young kid who goes up for the first time, that's what it was like for me. Even though I'm not a young kid anymore. It was just such a nice experience. For you, Max Trescott, you know, who's been flying since, you know, probably Bob was born.
Yep.
So,
how long has he been flying? Rob gave him his check ride.
That's right.
Yeah.
I got mine from Orville, so...
So what did you think about? Have you been in many gliders?
Relatively few gliders, a couple of them, and I would say probably a half a dozen different light sport aircraft. So that's kind of my basis for comparison is looking at it compared to things like the Skycatcher or the Sport Cruiser or the CTLS or some of the Remos, some of the ones that I have flown in the past. And I would say that the most distinguishing characteristic of this is, hey, it's a glider or a motor glider versus those which are not. And it's a much longer wing. And I was kind of intrigued to find out that the outer 5 feet of each wing is removable so that you can make it short enough to get into a 40-foot hangar, which I thought was rather clever design. Not that as an engineer I'm really excited about parts that come off of airplanes easily, but you know, this apparently is reliable and works well, so that's good.
I was going to say I don't have really any glider experience to speak of, but I did do one a couple of years ago in Colorado. You'd get the German part for me. We Americans would call it a STEMI, but it's called STEMI.
STEMI, yeah, they're here. They're our competitors. They sell a motor glider at a huge amount of money. It's a nice glider, but it's got an 85-foot wingspan.
God, yes, and that's why I was just thinking when you mentioned putting it away. I mean, this one you've got to take the wings off, or it ain't going to happen. But the point was something Max just touched on when. Because for those of us that fly powered airplanes, you pull the throttle back, you know the nose is going to do one thing. It's going to go down. We're just used to that. And I remember when the instructor that I was with said, well, I'm going to feather the prop. And I went, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and then the engine, as you said, the engine stops.
Right,
they
right.
Stow the propeller.
Yep.
And I didn't feel anything. I know we were coming down at a very, very tiny rate, but there was no change. It just got very quiet, and it just kind of hung there. And I went, "Wow, this is kind of cool." And I don't know. Have you ever been launch pad? I'm looking at. Have you ever been in one of these when they're out in the mountains or anything like that?
Yes, and you can do some ridge lift. I was in Germany, we went out and did ridge lift, and then you get to buzz the castle. That's so cool. But you do. There's a type of gliding where you do, as the air comes against the mountain, and you'll get a ridge lift there. Even though there's no thermal, you'll get just the wind coming up, and you can just rock. Just it's an elevator. You can just rock it up.
But see, I'd never done that before, and we were on the west side of the Rockies, out near Montrose, Colorado, and the instructor said, "Okay, let's do some ridge lifts," and he said, "You just kind of get right in there," and I went, "Okay." He said, way out here? He said, we're not going to get any lift this far. I said, you want me to get closer to the rocks?
Yeah.
He goes,
yeah,
come here, I'll show you. And I went, okay. I mean, they get right down and dirty there close. You can see the dimples on the rocks. They're serious.
And right out of Stuttgart, there's a gorgeous castle on the hill. And to get the lift, and it's you got to get within 200 feet of the castle.
Yeah, okay, well... that was an experience.
Yeah, they don't have ridge lifts down here in Florida.
No ridges. And actually, that's a loophole in the FARs. We do not have anything that prohibits you from buzzing castles. I don't know if you've noticed that in the FARs, but you can go as close to a castle as you want in the United States.
Great, that's handy, I guess.
I can see where people love it. The only part I thought was odd is that I met people that owned one of those STEMIs or whatever, And they'll be out there for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours.
Crazy, isn't it?
Just keep going, constantly soaring like a hawk out there. And I thought it was interesting. I guess I just didn't get that same.
The most magical moment is when you're in your glider, and suddenly you look over and realize that the little it's not another glider in the thermal with you. It's a hawk. That is just so.
And they're looking at you going, that's a big guy over there.
And there's probably one thing we should mention, a characteristic of all motor gliders, which is you could literally fly coast to coast, and it's technically a glider, but you don't need a medical because it's a glider, and yet it's also a powered aircraft. So for folks that may not be able to get a medical anymore for powered aircraft, well, here's one little kind of loophole that lets you fly really long distance with power. And of course, the other thing is young kids get to solo.
At 14, that's our big selling point. At 14, you can solo this aircraft that you can fly that outperforms a 172. It does 110 knots, you know, in cruise.
Yeah. But stall speed is really low. Holy
stall
cow.
Stall speed, I've had it down. I've actually motored along at full flaps at 37.
Wow. But if you're landing, you only get one chance to get it right.
You can always go around.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
No, seriously. I mean, yeah. with gliders, you only get one chance. With motor gliders, you get lots of chances, which is kind of neat.
So did I hear you say before you don't have your lake amphibian anymore?
I just sold it, in fact, just in the process of disposing of it. Yeah.
Disposing of it.
You
okay.
You mean selling it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, that was fun. I came down a little early to the show here, and I was up in Tavares, Florida, where there was a seaplane flying, and I was flying a Sea Ray LSA. It's a certified LSA, and I really like seaplane flying. I think it's a lot of fun. It's challenging. It's like flying a tail dragger to people that fly that, but I think that that's really a lot of fun, except the day we were out on, like I said, it was Monday. It's a little windy, kind of choppy, and boy, when you hit the water, you feel it.
So you're flying in the afternoon.
Yes, yeah. Actually.
So sea pilots learn that the wind is calmest in the morning, the waves are the smallest, and if you're hitting the waves and they're tall, man, it's like banging on concrete.
I know that now. Yeah. So, but, well, anyway.
Well, Max Trescott, I want to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about your podcast, Aviation News Talk Podcast, because I think a lot of the people at this event here at Sun and Fun, if they don't already know about your show and listen to it, would be very, very interested. Tell us a little bit about it and what caused? Did you just figure this was so easy, you might as well just do one yourself?
Well, all I can say is that I owe a great debt to you, Max Light, because I've learned so much by being a co-host on the Airplane Geeks all these years before I was foolish enough to say, hey, this looks so easy, I could do it. And the reality is, for anybody who hasn't done a podcast before, yes, lots of parts of it are easy, but when you sum all the parts together, it can be pretty time-consuming. That's but the reason I really wanted to do it was I fly typically 5 days a week, sometimes 6 days a week. I usually knock off at noon on Friday, and I'm back in the cockpit again, noonish on Sunday, and I kind of take the weekend off.
I hate you.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But someone's got to do it. And every so often, in fact, like fairly frequently, I'd hop out of the airplane and go, oh, man, that's a really key insight. I just got to, share that with people. Now, on our show, we cover so many different things in the Airplane Geeks that there wasn't really enough time to kind of go in depth in terms of, something specific to general aviation pilots. Because on Airplane Geeks, we're appealing to a broader spectrum. We've got folks interested in commercial aviation, military, general aviation. So I was really interested in doing something that was really targeted at general aviation. And I figured, hey, why cover lots of topics if they're going to be people that want to get really in-depth on a particular topic? So the benefit is that it allows me to, focus just on that. And so I do a combination of news on most of the shows where we just kind of, similar to what we do on Airplane Geeks, kind of talk through the different news stories. And what I try to do is not just, read the stories, but offer some perspective as well. So usually, for many of the stories, we'll throw in a little opinion, at the end, and just trying to help position it for people kind of understand, the news story in a broader historical context of, how does that particularly, fit in. And then usually we'll drill down in depth on a particular topic. So we've done, stories on crosswind landings. And that's a good example. I think a lot of people will say, yeah, I thought I knew a lot about crosswind landings, and then I listened to your show, and I learned, even more. And it's possible to do that for a lot of different things. For example, I talked one time about magnetos, and I thought I knew a reasonable amount of magnetos, but by doing the research, found out even more. And I think that most listeners who came away from that episode thought, oh, my gosh, I thought I knew a lot about magnetos, but, gee, here are a couple of things that I learned which will enhance my safety when I'm hanging around a propeller, because now I realize, oh, there are some failure modes and some gotchas that could kill you if you were, not particularly knowledgeable about it. So that's what we're seeking to do, is just to try and provide really in-depth treatment of topics so that even for pilots who already know a lot about flying, they can walk away from it and go, oh, That one little nugget that I learned there, that could make a difference in, in my life. So that's what Aviation News Talk, podcast is about, is helping, general aviation pilots become as knowledgeable as possible. And here's my theory. Anytime you're dealing with something that could kill you, you really want to know as much about it as possible.
Right. Yes. Yes. And I'll have to say, too, as a non-pilot, right? Yeah. I'm not a pilot. It's interesting because, I'm learning about, aviation. I'm learning about GA, but I'm learning about things that I didn't even know that I didn't know, that are interesting. I mean, when you you had an episode, I think, where you talked about what you do and what you don't do if you have an engine out just after takeoff.
Mm.
Right. And I mean, I never really thought about that. Does it apply to me? Well, maybe not. I don't know. But just, what you do and why you do it, this is very interesting to me.
But by the way, we have a plan going on here. My brother Rob over here and I are planning to figure out how to get you into flight training. So.
I know. You've been trying for a long time.
Well, we got him to an air show. Listen, I think that's a great start.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, there's all of the prime vendors, Gleim, King, Sporties, all have Sun and Fun discounts.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I spend so much time podcasting, I think.
A transition I want to get into real quick.
Yeah.
Let's hear from the newbie.
Yeah.
Your impressions of coming to the big air show.
And to help you out, I went ahead and reserved the URL for you. It's called the Student Pilot Podcast by Max Flight.
That's already been taken.
.com.
Yeah. No, I think, one of the impressions that I have from this is that the community spirit is really strong.
It is.
I mean, you can say hello to anybody. You can just start talking with anybody, strike up a conversation. I can leave, I won't say how much, a lot of money's worth of recording gear laying around, and I'm not particularly concerned about that. Nowhere else would I ever leave anything, the camera, whatever, just sitting on a bench someplace.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's really different. And as I've told a lot of people so far over the last 2 days, after I was here for the first 2 hours, that's how long it took. 2 hours is how long it took for me to decide that I'm coming back next year.
Interesting.
No question about it. No, no question about it. Now, this year, the plan was to kind of do it right and fly in. Right? As I live in Connecticut. The plan was for me to get to Atlanta and then meet up with a friend who's got a 63...
Beach Musketeer, was
Beach,
it?
Yeah, Musketeer. And
let's go ahead and do a shout out to him because he's stuck.
Yeah, Dispatcher Mike, absolutely. Right, he works for a major airline as a dispatcher, which is, that's a great, the great kind of background to have for someone who's going to fly you down to some event in this 1963 airplane.
And another career opportunity as well for people that want to get into aviation. They can become dispatchers.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it was interesting because the night before, let me finish. The reason that we didn't fly down is because he got sick the day we were going to fly down. He came down with something and he had a fever and all. And so there was no way that he could fly. So I had to drive the rest.
That's
the,
what he told
the
you.
The rest of the way. No, I saw him that morning.
Oh,
no, he was
okay.
Definitely, no, yeah.
All
he
right.
was in he was in rough shape. So that had been the plan to, to fly in and in camp. So I had to, so we decided I'd drive down, which meant that since we were going to use his tent, I had to stop along the way and buy a tent so I could sleep, to sleep in, a few other things for camping. And
yeah, you're getting the full experience.
The
yeah,
full
you
experience,
are.
Yeah.
You're not under the wing of an airplane, which is kind of the classic way to
right,
camp.
Right, which is what the idea was going
to
be.
You still get to camp, and it's all self-contained here. You can buy food
yeah.
for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and there are bathrooms and probably even showers somewhere.
There are.
Yeah.
Maybe I should pack my tent up and just find somebody else's plane and set it up underneath their wing.
So let me ask you a probing question.
Okay, Rob.
In July, will you be coming to AirVenture?
Maybe next year.
I have been listening to this.
We are done with him. We are so done with him.
Oh, no. 2 in 1 year is maybe kind of tough. We'll see.
Well, you realize
we'll see.
You don't actually have to drive to get to an air show. You realize that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
It makes it a little easier, especially when it's halfway across the country.
And putting in a plug, you know, at that air show up north,
yep.
You know, we do a Podapalooza where we bring in all the podcasts and podcast listeners.
Yeah.
And you would be a guest of honor, you know. And we give prizes out. And we'll feed you.
Can I bring my own microphone?
Yes.
My favorite mic. Although these are pretty good here. You know, this operation here, Sun and Fun Radio, I mean, if you're at the event and you haven't seen this, it's pretty slick. I mean, these guys, they know what they're doing. They know how to do it. They've been doing it for a long time.
25 years, yeah.
And which is amazing. And, you know, it's not that easy to do a live program like this.
There's a guy out there with an Airplane Geeks button on his hat.
Oh, my gosh.
A fan.
We found one, right?
Yeah.
I just happened to notice. You thought we wouldn't notice that, but I noticed that, even my old eyes. But I think that's pretty cool. So at least, and of course, we did. Where's Dave? Oh, he was here.
Yeah, just
Dave, part of our audience, too.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Dave, we have Abby. But
Yes. And there have been an awful lot of people here that we've met. Some people who have been past guests on the show. Met a number of folks from that category. Also, a number of listeners, people that have been listening to Airplane Geeks for a while. So,
and then there are those, of course, that said, "I will never come back.
Not after
to
this.
Listen to this ever again."
And I've got German chocolate for him, smuggled German
because
chocolate.
Because he has the Airplane Geeks button.
There you go. That's what that's
pretty.
It
cool.
Pays to be an Airplane Geeks listener. Hey, I was just going to tag onto your comment here about Sun and Fun radio. I worked at five different radio stations prior life, and I would say that, you know, it's funny, even though that was many years ago. A lot of the setups seem very similar, and you know, it's in some ways similar to a commercial radio station. So it's kind of fun to have the microphone again, and they actually have a transmitter here, and people can actually hear this.
Yeah,
you know, over the AM radio.
Yeah, and there's quite a crew too. I mean, there's guys running the board. There's people doing the editing. There's, you know, it's quite an operation.
They just don't have the old cart machines that we used to have 40 years ago, which was how people would play commercials, which were on a 70-second loop of tape. And so you'd put a 60-second commercial on it, pop it into the dedicated machine. And
what if you had records and you had to get the
I remember the cart machines.
Oh, I'm not that old.
It's just the right place. So. Well, I'll put in a plug for that show up north. The guys at AirVenture have a pretty decent radio station,
it's
too.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. But I think this is... just a it's winding down tonight, waiting for there's a nighttime air show. What
there,
so this
is.
Doesn't that probably doesn't go on until about 9 or something, right?
Oh, I think it starts soon after 7:30.
7:30.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay.
And they're going to have a drone show, which is great because you probably are all aware of the new Olympic event that has just been announced.
No.
No.
I sent an email to you folks. I'm not sure if you saw it or not. So there was aeronews.net. That's aero-news.net. Jim Campbell's operation, which a weekly email that you can get with all kinds of news. Jim's a great guy, been in aviation for years. Every year on April 1st, he has April Fools.
Oh, okay.
And he has different people who write stories that, you know, kind of look credible. I know this because I used to write some of these stories years ago, and I swore him to secrecy. I said, I will write these stories for you, but you will never reveal that I wrote any of them. And I haven't done it for a number of years. But the one I just saw here on April 1st was a new Olympic event called Drone Skeet. And so at the, you know, the 2028 Olympics, whatever, people will use shotguns to blow drones out of the sky, which is kind of odd because, you know, Max, doing the UAV Digest, where you talk about drones every week on that podcast, that actually happens. I mean, there have been multiple events where people have, you know, fired on their neighbor's drone.
Yes, which, of course, is illegal because, well, illegal. The FAA considers drones to be aircraft.
Yep.
And you cannot shoot down aircraft without
running afoul. Amazon delivering packages is kind of like we said, skeet shooting with prizes.
but I kind of wonder, you know, the thing that really bothers me is people that point lasers at aircraft. And I just wonder if there's kind of a similar mentality, which is, hey, there's something
stupid.
There's something in the sky, and I can do whatever I want to it as it passes over my property.
So. I'll tell you, the guy I want to interview is the Egyptian pilot during the when they overthrew Mubarak at the Arab Spring.
Yeah,
and during the whole thing, and they had a Egyptian military helicopter fly over the big protests, and you can see it. There has to be like 50 or 80 lasers pointed at him.
I
want to know what he did. You know, was he like wearing anti-goggles? Because at the bottom of the airplane looks absolutely spectacular because everybody in the crowd was like anti-military and showing their lasers up to him.
Yikes.
I want to talk to that guy.
That would be interesting.
All right, we're going to take another break, and we'll be back soon. And we're back. You're listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast on Sun and Fun Radio.
Now, remember, we said Airplane Geeks South podcast live. Okay.
There's a reason he's longer a regular co-host.
He's hard to train, isn't he?
Okay. Well, as we mentioned, we talk about a lot of different topics, aviation-related, on the podcast. And, of course, one of the ones that we've been talking about a lot lately is the issues with the Boeing 737 MAX aircraft, of course, relating to the two fatal crashes we've seen. We like to talk about some of the issues, of course, recognizing that the investigations in both cases are still underway. There are a lot of people that have been on the news channels offering opinions and thoughts, and there are a lot of issues associated with what we saw happen here. A
lot of moving parts.
A lot of moving parts. And, we see fixes and corrective actions and things, which is kind of, I think, a little different because we don't have the results of the investigations yet. I don't know, Rob, you've been on some of the networks, the major news outlets, talking about this topic. What do you think the big issues are that we should all be concerned about?
Well, I'll tell you one issue that bugs the heck out of me about this is, of course, as you said, the investigations are still going on, so it's all speculation. We're looking at similarities between the two accidents and the profiles of, how the airplanes went down. But in both cases, I've heard bad signal coming from the angle of attack indicator, and they're talking about a software update for the Boeing to fix. And nobody has said, by the way, why do these angle of attack indicators keep giving the Boeing MCAS system bum information? I haven't heard anybody talk about that, and I'm still waiting for that. I just think that's very strange.
Yes. I've thought the same thing, and I started to poke around. There are a couple of manufacturers of these angle of attack indicators, at least as used by the airframers, the major airframers. And I would think that those folks would be very interested in kind of understanding what's going on here.
And nobody's even mentioned it.
Yeah.
Just today I saw something that said the Ethiopian guys, from what little they got out of the flight data recorders, I don't know where this information came from, but they said they did try the fix that Boeing was trying to get pilots to use, and I still, understanding how it works, that doesn't make any sense to me because they're essentially pulling the circuit breakers on the electrics. And without that, I don't see how this thing could keep happening. But,
my question is that just struck me was that, always been taught, and I'll leave it to the two jet guys who've done the most, is that when you hit that that autopilot disconnect, the automation should stop helping you fly the airplane. You're on your own now. And that's when the MCAS started originally, and the solution was to turn the autopilot back on. And that's like never been in the checklist of, turn the autopilot back on.
Yeah, I can't imagine if you're having a pitch problem, the last thing I'd want to do is turn the autopilot on because, autopilots have very distinct limits of movement as to when they can capture the airplane in there in that kind of a situation with this porpoising. I cannot imagine the autopilot even engaging. But again, these people are just, they're so confused as to what's happening. It just, there's so many, again, this is, there's so many unanswered questions. We're going to have to wait for the reports, obviously, but I just can't imagine how these, the second one got away from people. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I think, as you described there, the behavior is totally counterintuitive, and it, partially because when you engage in autopilot, most of them will maintain your current attitude. So if you're wildly pitching up or wildly pitching down, probably the last thing on a pilot's mind is, oh yeah, let's get some help in maintaining this wild, you know, attitude either up or down. But you know, prior to this, you guys know this is a second career for me. I spent 25 years working at one of the world's largest computer manufacturers, and used to deal with data rooms that were filled with literally multiple millions of dollars worth of computers. And if one of those things goes down, it costs companies hundreds of thousands of dollars an hour. And one of the big things in designing a data room is you're trying to eliminate single points of failure.
Right.
And certainly you try and do the same thing from an engineering standpoint in critical things like airplanes. And so it's just beyond me that there could have been a design that was approved that had just a single AOA, which became a single point of failure, which would lead to this kind of behavior. Yeah. Now, there may have been an option for perhaps two AOAs, and maybe some airlines didn't buy the option for the second one. But something about this just doesn't pass the smell test.
Yeah,
as an engineer, from a design standpoint, there's something really wrong with a design like that being approved.
But, I think... Oh, go ahead. You were going to say something. I guess what bothers me, too, is that it got past all the engineers and the test pilots and all the other folks at Boeing, except that story that ran a couple of weeks ago, the fellow at the Seattle Times wrote, Dominic Gates, he interviewed engineers that said, look, don't use my name, but I can tell you that I told them that this was a bad idea. And so there are just going to be, I think, a lot of lawsuits against Boeing, and it's going to cost them a lot of money. And today or yesterday, we just heard it's going to take an extra few weeks to get the software approved by the FAA, because the FAA is going to really want to tread very carefully on this.
Sure.
And then you've got to get people to fly the airplane again. I don't mean the pilots. I'm talking about the public. And they may say, well, let's see how this all works out.
It sounds just vaguely familiar of, one of the first shuttle disaster where, they had the engineers said, hey, it's too cold. We could have a problem here. Management overruled them. So in general, I think engineers rock. They know their business. They know where the shortcomings are. And sometimes they get overruled by folks, and it can lead to these kinds of problems.
I was reading, and I can't remember the source, but I think it's a case of they had terms for it of catastrophic versus critical versus,
yes.
And they got the MCAS and its system that supports it in the certification to be rated as a one or two levels down from catastrophic, and therefore that's how it flowed through. And it's like, wait a minute, who decided that it's not a catastrophic versus a critical versus a hazard versus a whatever their scale is?
Yeah, it is really scary, and then of course, as you know, Max, when you've been in a simulator, we know when we're in a simulator, they're always going to try to break something on us. The engine's going to quit, the flaps aren't going to work, the gear won't come down. You get ice. We always know they're going to do something, but when it happens in real life, and you're just sitting there, fat, dumb, and happy, going, yeah, let's take off, and something happens that is a surprise, and part of your brain goes, oh, shit, Jesus, and that takes...
Live radio.
That takes 5 seconds alone for your, the adrenaline to slow down, and you just say, what in the world is going on? And in fact, those poor guys in Ethiopia, I didn't realize that they were only 450 feet in the air when this started, so they didn't have a lot of room for error.
No. Well, I think there's a lot more to learn about what's happened and to learn about what the root causes are, what the contributing factors were in these accidents, and just really what is the change that we need to see. I have the feeling it's more than just a change in some software. I think there's some maybe some deeper issues that'll be addressed. But in the meantime, you know, the FAA is I'll say suffering under accusations of being too the trusting of the manufacturers. You've got the manufacturer, in this case, Boeing, that's suffering under demands from its customers for compensation for all of this, and it's just not a very pleasant thing. You hate to see these things in aviation. But one thing that really concerns me is we're seeing the specter of criminal charges, and I've always felt that one of the advantages of or one of the good features of the aviation system or culture in the United States is that we stay away from that, because that just hinders a good investigation. If there are criminal charges involved, and you know you may be the target for those. What do you do? You clam up, and that doesn't help an investigation.
That would just knock me over with a feather if at some point we find out that someone was criminally negligent at the feds or at Boeing or something. I can't believe anybody would knowingly
There's not a level of complicity there.
I don't think this was purposeful. You know, I think this is probably a systemic problem where somehow there were just enough little holes in the Swiss cheese, and they just all lined up perfectly. And they'll go back, and they'll probably find a chain of, at least three or four different things.
Yeah, absolutely.
If any one of those three or four hadn't happened, this wouldn't have slipped through. Right. And it's probably going to change some of the processes at Boeing, I suspect. I think they're going to be certifying aircraft a little bit differently in the future.
What I'm concerned with, looking long, Boeing's going to fix this. We know that. They're going to fix it. Whether it's cheap or expensive, they're going to fix it. What I'm looking long for is how much of the pendulum swinging where the FAA now wants to see every single thing you're doing and how that's going to affect Gamma.
It's an interesting point.
Suddenly certification of new aircraft is going to just be, an impossible hill to climb because you just can't afford, especially at some of the lighter end or middle end.
Sure, we just went through this Part 23 rewrite to simplify certification. Look at all the new products. I mean, the UAvionics Sky Beacon and the Tail Beacon. Yeah. It took them a long time to get it TSO'd, but I mean, nothing compared to what it would have probably taken 10 years ago. Yeah. And that's a really interesting point that you make, is that I hope there isn't that now we've got a double, triple, quadruple check everything to get a new product to market, because the prices will go out of sight.
Okay. And I don't think that's going to be necessary. I got to say, I think this is probably a fairly narrow set of problems that can be addressed. I don't think it means that we need wholesale overhaul of the certification process. And I think
there are people in Congress that are calling for that. But what happened after the Buffalo crash when they got involved in legislating how many hours a pilot should have before he climbs in the right seat. Except that countries outside of the U.S., Europe, Australia, they don't have the same problem with putting a 500-hour pilot in the right seat, because the hours are kind of irrelevant. Yeah. Kind of, not completely.
Which is ironic, because in that crash, the pilots had way over the minimums that are now being mandated.
Exactly.
So in a sense, it was a fix. It wasn't directly related to the cause. And I think that's the thing we're hoping doesn't happen here, is that we have new regulations that aren't at all related to the problem that's occurred.
Yeah, well.
But that's the problem with the left brain, right brain. The left brain is very logical and says, data. Got to have data, or it doesn't make any sense. And then this right side going, oh my God, this sounds scary, and I don't know if I want to do that. And so that we've got to balance all that somehow.
Yeah, I think that's where we get the emotional knee-jerk reactions. Congress wants to rush for a fix, and that's kind of more on the emotional side than than always on the logical side.
Yeah, somehow I thought we had bigger problems to deal with in Washington than... That's right. We can't talk about
politics.
That. No politics. I wasn't going to talk politics.
Politics stop at the FAA door.
Yes.
And actually, let me just say, I want to make it real clear. I think the FAA in general does an awesome, outstanding job. So I'm not faulting them in any way, shape, or form. I think they do an amazing job with very limited resources. And I kind of wish that they wouldn't see declining budgets on the operations side. They've got their arms around a lot of different problems, and they're highly constrained with the budgets and the personnel they have. So anyway, my hat's off to them for what they do.
Yeah. All right. Well, as you can see, we cover a lot of different topics on the Airplane Geeks.
Is it time for us to go home?
No, but is it time for you to leave?
I probably should. I'm looking at my wrist like there's a watch there. I mean, come on. Okay, I haven't had a watch in 30 years.
He's looking at his entrance wristband to see what time it is. It's 2019, according to your wristband.
That's right.
It's 2019, folks. I think it's time for me to go.
We should explain why you have to go.
I'm supposed to be
a guest of honor or invitee.
No, I'm supposed to go visit the Bahamian tourist board booth down the road
down in Nassau, and, right? Aren't they helicoptering you over to the Bahamas?
Yeah,
right?
We're going there in June, and so anyway, but...
Good for you.
So, but listen, this has been really fun to be on the Airplane Geeks South podcast live. I mean, I think there's a tradition here.
Someone's going to have to write that down and tell me later.
Yeah. we'll have cue cards.
Yeah,
like
on
Saturday Night Live.
Rob Mark, of course, senior editor at Flying Magazine. But Rob does a few other things too. Publisher of the Jetwine blog.
That's right. I think people can find me at Jetwine on Twitter, although I don't think anybody listens, reads Twitter anymore. You have to be on Instagram, I guess, or
something like that. Ask your daughter again.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's right. I have a daughter in Hollywood, so she knows all that stuff. But and it's been find me at flyingmag.com, which is where the magazine is online, and I'm usually walking around at shows.
I want to notice something. I'm going to call you out. Have you guys ever read Flying Magazine? Notice that every other contributor in Flying Magazine has their picture on the editorial page, except Rob, who's got the face for radio. He didn't, not even in print.
Yeah, but there's a reason. You missed a key point there. Yeah. I'm not a contributor. See, I'm an editor. And none of us editors have our pictures there. Not Steve
I don't know.
Pope
Steve Pope
Pia.
Has his picture on his byline.
Well, on his page when he does his editorial.
Right. So which means, again, you're the only one that doesn't have his picture.
So can you call him for me? And
I'll do that.
And tell him that you guys really think I ought to be on
you want to see your smiling face on the... Yeah.
Yeah, a senior smiling face.
Senior.
But I'm upset with Launchpad right now because he just said you have a face for radio. Most people don't know. You and I are brothers. And,
That's right.
We look alike, so I don't know what he's saying about me.
I was the short one.
Well, Mom loved you best.
Yeah. That's really the disgusting part of being here at this radio show.
Disgusting.
Because... All of you guys, well, you're closer to height with me than... But these guys, they're all like
giants,
6'9" or something. Yeah. David Abbey, where is he?
Yeah, I know.
David.
I know.
Dave's the same thing. He's like 6'7" or something, and I feel very inadequate. So that's why I'm really leaving early. Yeah.
Regardless, you were still outstanding in your field. So.
When the rains came and the winds blew, he was outstanding in his field.
Excellent.
This has been really fun. I hope we have a chance to do this again.
Rob, don't worry because it's...
Yeah, these
is
are
it
Max's.
The short or is it the meek that inherit the earth? I always get them confused.
Yeah, so this we have Max East, Max West. This is Max Midwest. Okay?
Max Midwest.
So that short, meek, inherit, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
I'm never sure.
I never am either. So, well, listen, I know you guys are going to hang around for a little bit, but I'm going to go try and find the tourism board from the Bahamas, and I really enjoyed being invited here to do this, and let's do it again next year.
Same time.
And next year we bring it's beer, though, right?
Oh, yeah, we could use some beer.
Yeah. Oh, here comes a Huey.
Oh, yeah, that's a...
But anyway, so, all guys, right. It's been great, and we will meet up again.
Yes, absolutely.
All right,
we're
see
here
ya.
For the week. All right, great. A couple of things that we might want to talk about. When Max Trescott you spent some time with the FAA just, what was that, yesterday?
It was. Recently? And it was a good thing because I'm sure people listening to you just now probably said,
uh-oh, he's in trouble.
He spent some time with the FAA.
They give you a phone number to copy down?
No, but that's kind of funny you mentioned that because, you know, whenever I'm in the air and a controller does something wrong, I always want to say to them, advise when ready to copy a phone number. You know, just turn that right back on them, but I've never had the guts to do that. But yeah, so you know that last year I went and got my type rating in the Cirrus Vision Jet, which was like being in Disneyland for 9 years for a pilot, or nine days for a pilot. It was great fun. I it's hard for me to think of anything more fun than spending 9 days with Cirrus back at their Knoxville Vision Center, you know, rocking and rolling in the simulator and just really doing a deep dive in the data. You know, I think some people may not realize that when you do a type rating, it's not just about the flying. I would say that substantially more than half the time is spent in school and also doing self-study on all of the systems. And when you get into a jet, oh my gosh, there are a heck of a lot of systems. You need to understand, you know, which valves do what, and you know, it's kind of a fun challenge. And I think, you know, Max, you're an engineer. I'm an engineer. You probably understand how much fun it is just to dive down into something and to try to fully understand it. And that's part of the fun process. But anyway, for type ratings, which are done in the simulator, and the check ride is also done in the simulator, the requirement is that before you can then go off and exercise your privileges on your own, you need 25 hours of SOE, supervised operating experience, where you are with, yeah, exactly. Max is giving me a look of like, really? What's that?
That's in the plane, flying? That's
subsequently after you get the type rating. So when you get the type rating on your license, it actually has an SOE restriction in parentheses. I forget the exact wording. I've now accumulated more than that time in the jet. And so I needed to get my restriction lifted. And to do that turned out to be about an hour-long process. Now, they told me the computers were running slow, which I believe because we're here at a remote site at Sun and Fun at Lakeland, Florida. And the reason I did it here, some of the different FISDO offices around the country are not as well-staffed as others. And I did talk with my local FISDO, and they said that for me to get an appointment was going to be, I hesitate to even tell you how many months from now, but it was
really,
it was going to be multiple months. So I brought my logbook along with me, which shows, you know, that I've done all of the required time just on the hope that maybe the FAA might have a presence here at Sun and Fun and be able to process paperwork. And they have a remote facility here at Sun and Fun. They don't use it all the time, and it's not their main office. The Orlando FISDO has a separate office where the different inspectors work out of. But this has been a video production facility in the past. They're not doing as much of that as they have in the past because of budget reasons. But during Sun and Fun, that building is fully staffed. There are really three parts of the building. One is where they give all the presentations, and there's a theater that would seat, I'm guessing, 80 or 90 people, and it's got a stage, and I'll be there presenting tomorrow, actually, on stage, presenting about night flying, what your CFI didn't teach you.
Oh, yes, I saw that in the program.
Yeah, so I've given that seminar multiple times, some of them in the Sun and Fun classrooms, but this particular particular one is kind of the biggest venue. The FAA has about four presentations a day there. So that's a part of the building.
Now, can anybody go to that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's open to the public. And you probably really want to go to that. You know why?
No, why?
That building's air-conditioned.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And then another part of the building is exhibits, where the FAA has people who've flown in from different parts of the country that are talking about different FAA programs. So if you want to learn about next-gen, you can talk to a next-gen expert.
I want to interrupt you. It's there, and threw a big shout-out to the FAA, because it's not just people standing that are experts. So, for instance, you know, they are processing lots of, when I went to find the guy and I was like, look, I updated my, you know, I moved, and but my pilot's license still shows the old one. When do I get my new one? And he's like, oh, well, let's do that for you right here, and we'll just waive the $2 fee. And they were, everybody there at their little booth is a subject matter expert and has his computer open and can solve your problem. The FAA booth rocks.
Yeah, good.
Totally.
Good.
Yeah, they are incredibly well staffed. So, for example, the second part is the exhibit areas, and then you go around to the front of the building, and that's like walking into a regular FAA office. There were probably six people, I would guessing, sitting at computers, and there were little signs, you know, pilot questions here, and, you know, forms processed here, and stuff like that. And they did everything that they would have done in their office. Nice. Which starts with the 8710-1 form. Uh-huh. Now, you're a non-pilot, so you're probably not familiar with that particular form, but anybody who's ever done a check ride has had to fill out the 8710. Though, actually, these days, most paperwork has been substituted with a new system called IACRA, which is an online system. But we went ahead and used paper in this case because the SOE restriction, it's a little different. It doesn't fit into the normal system. So for things that don't quite fit into the, you know, the normal, 99% of processes, you know, we did the paper application for that. And essentially, you know, you just sit there and fill out a lot of information about yourself as a pilot. And then ultimately, the same thing happened that would happen at the end of the check ride, which is that they issue you a temporary certificate right there on the spot. I've got my certificate that is now looks different, has the SOE restriction removed, and I'll get the new plastic one sometime in the mail. Now, interesting thing I learned while I was standing there, because the computers were running slow, and so I got to overhear the conversation going on next to me. I mentioned earlier that Norwegian Air has apparently closed a base locally as they're kind of contracting a little bit, dealing with cash flow issues. There was a pilot in there who had been laid off, and he is now seeking employment as a captain for a U.S. airline. He's had interviews with major legacy carriers here in the U.S. And he's been dealing with an issue which I was totally unaware of, which is there is an FAR 121 point something. I've heard the number. I don't remember it. Which says in order to act as captain, Part 121 captain here in the United States, you must have at least 1,000 hours of Part 121 experience prior to that. Now, this gentleman, I think, had 16,000 hours. I think he was on the 787 and a number of different aircraft. However, he was flying for a European carrier, and that does not qualify as Part 121. And so the gentleman there went through and looked at all the different regulations, and there are many regulations that have equivalency. So if you don't meet a particular regulation, you can still qualify in some ways by some equivalency. And for example, if you're working on a flight instructor certificate, if you've got military, flight instructor certificate, then you don't have to, do that. Or if you're becoming a flight instructor and you happen to have a teaching certificate, you've either been certified as a teacher for high school or something like that. There, you don't have to take the FOI, the Fundamentals of Instruction exam. So there are lots of things in the FAA where you can qualify for something in an alternate fashion. He did all the research and basically said, I'm sorry, sir, but there is no alternate path to qualifying for this 1,000 hours of Part 121 experience, even though your 16,000 hours of experience with a foreign airline are substantially identical to that.
Yeah.
So I'm sure this was, not great news for this gentleman, because I think the salary for being a first officer is going to be substantially lower. But that may be, the choice that he has to face is that he'll be flying as a first officer until he gets 1,000 hours with a U.S. airline, and then he can become a captain again.
I am surprised that there isn't a reciprocity agreement between EASA and the FAA.
Yeah, it was news to me. I mean, there is reciprocity in a lot of different things. So, for example, if you have a U.S. pilot certificate and you want to have a certificate that allows you to fly planes in England, for example, yeah, there's a conversion process.
Or in Germany, where I did it.
Absolutely, and I worked with people in the opposite direction, helping them get their license converted to a U.S. equivalent as well. But this particular item, the requirement for 1,000 hours to be a captain of an airline, no other way to do that.
Wow. Wow. Speaking of reciprocity, real quick, I have my German pilot's license. It's expired now. But in Deutsch, and I love the phrase. You know what I am in Deutsch?
No. Ein Flieger.
Private Flugführer.
So fantastisch.
Oh, no. Isn't that a great title?
It sounds great. It goes along with the mustache, you know. Yeah.
Launchpad, did I tell you, ich habe in Deutschland gewohnt?
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So I was a student in Deutschland many, many years ago.
Wow. Oh, very. That's
but,
good.
But I haven't flown in Germany. I have flown in Ireland. In fact, I just got an email yesterday from someone who was headed over there who was looking to meet up with some of my contacts over there. I'll just tell you briefly, I ran into Mr. General Aviation in Ireland, and that's my name for him. He would be embarrassed to be called that. But Trevor Kellett is a dairy farmer, and he's got a farm of over 100 head of dairy cows that lives in County Meath, north of Dublin. But on the side, he is a pilot examiner. So he gives a substantial number of the pilot check rides to student pilots all over Ireland.
Ireland.
Huh. And so when I was in Ireland, somebody suggested that I contact him. And it turns out that he really enjoys meeting, you know, pilots who are visiting from America and will sometimes, you know, put them up at his house for a night or so. And we've become very close friends. We actually met up with him in Iceland a couple years ago. My wife has become incredibly good friends with his wife to the extent where one of their new lines of dairy cows was named after my wife, Lori.
No kidding.
Absolutely.
Honey, wait.
Honey Farm Lori. Yeah, absolutely. So their name is Honey Farm.
You got to be real trendy if your wife, they've named a cow after your wife. Well, that could just turn into
real
problems.
No. This is an entire line of dairy cows.
See, that's different. That's, you know, who can say that, you know?
Exactly.
That they've got that.
And when I was over there in Ireland, discovered that one of the ways he beats the high cost of flying, he's got his own runway at the farm. Mm. And so we've all heard about the high fees of flying in Europe.
Sure, yeah.
And if you've got your own runway at your own farm, there's no landing fee. And he said that there are many folks around Ireland who have done just that. One day we flew in an airplane to visit a gentleman who's building an RV-7. I wrote an article for EAA magazine about that particular build. And so we flew into his strip. And another day I flew with a gentleman who's a seaplane pilot, and we flew his Piper Cub on floats off the lake. He's got his own little hangar on the lake. So again, no landing fees. So I think pilots certainly in Ireland have been very creative in finding out how to avoid some of the high cost of flying, and hopefully other parts of the world have discovered that too.
Wow. Cows and pilots. There's probably some kind of a joke there that you could construct.
I can tell you that his email address starts with flying farmer at
yeah,
something or another.
Yeah. All right. A different topic altogether, but something that seems to be coming up a lot lately is this topic of urban air mobility. And if you're not clued in on this, a lot of companies, including big ones like Airbus and Boeing and others, a lot of medium-sized companies like Pipistrel, and a lot of startups and VC-based, they're funded operations, are looking at this. And this is not the greatest way to describe it if you don't know what it is, but it's kind of like think the Jetsons, except everybody's got a giant quadcopter. That's not really an accurate way, but the idea is, to me anyway, is that our ground-based transportation system is kind of two-dimensional and is becoming overtaxed. So let's use the third dimension, and we'll all be flying around in quadcopter Ubers and things like that.
There was I want to bring this around with why I don't think this is going to happen, and it's because in this month's, actually I think it was last month's, Air and Space magazine, there was an article about, and I forgot the man's name, he's considered the Jackie Robinson of aviation, flying helicopter.
Jackie Robinson of aviation?
He was he flew for the Tuskegee Airmen, he ended up doing Pan Am's helicopter service in New York City.
New York Airways.
Right. And the point being is New York Airways was doing great business until they had an accident on top of the Pan Am building, mm-hmm. and a Sikorsky comes tumbling down off the top of a actually just parts, not even the airframe didn't, just parts, yeah. comes down off the top of a 50-story building and kills four people. And then suddenly it was like, okay, no more of this helicopter flying passengers.
I can think of lots and lots of reasons why this might never happen. But the fact that there are so many intelligent companies and organizations investing a lot of money in it makes me wonder, you know, am I missing something? Am I just not with, am I getting too old to accept, you know, something?
I'm with you there,
because
I just don't see them regulatory letting, you know, quadcopter air vehicles of yeah. whatever suspension,
yeah.
you know, maneuvering between high rises until, you know, it's like, wait, what if one of these rotors fails and this thing comes tumbling down into the street?
Exactly, yeah.
I got to tell you, I have been on New York Airways twice. Once was as a kid, and sure enough, we went to the top of the Pan Am building and, you know, boarded the helicopter, went flying
Ooh.
Off. Yeah, that was pretty remarkable. And the second time was I flew from, I think, Newark to JFK, and it was a weird situation where I was supposed to catch a flight to Europe on business, and I was late.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I kind of been in the same camp as both of you gentlemen. I agree that there is a huge amount of money which is chasing the flying car, if we can just call it for shorthand. And yet, on the other hand, a couple things. One, I think that there have been many cycles in venture capital where people have poured huge amounts of money into things
that didn't
amount to anything. And these were all very smart people and very creative. And it just turned out that the markets didn't materialize in the way that they thought they did. And one of the similar examples, I guess, would be all the hoopla that was around Eclipse when they started out.
The VLJs.
Absolutely. VLJs were going to, as they said, darken the skies with dentists. You know, they were going to be every professional middle-class person was going to have a personal light jet and go flying around. And we were also going to have all kinds of on-demand jet services where, gosh, you could just go over to your local airport, you know, pay a few bucks, and boop, they're going to, you know, pop you from point A to point Z. And all of that has fallen through. In fact, it's been a very tough market for any of these companies. Dayjet, I believe, was the name of a company here in the Southeast which had eclipses that were going to run around. And they did for a period of time among different cities. In my area, we had Surf Air, which, again, membership airline, now essentially defunct. I mean, they went through a lot of money with a membership airline. And there was at least one other hot for hire service using SR-22s somewhere in the Southeast, which has gone down. So, yeah, I'm skeptical. I'm just not sure that the market will shape up the way, you know, you've just described it, you know, everybody having their own quadcopter. I think there may be some narrow versions of that. You know, there may be, you know, regional kinds of, you know, here's the quick shuttle that gets you to the airport from five different locations around Houston, you know.
Unlike hovercrafts, the only place those successfully work are across the channel and the Black Sea.
Interesting point. Yeah, I remember hovercraft were going to be everywhere as well, too. So, yeah, I think that in the early phase, it's hard to know exactly how these things are going to shake out. Here's my bet. Mm. My bet is there's going to be some sub-segment of this which will stick and will, you know, be successful. And it's not unlike, for example, the internet bubble of 2000 and 2001. You know, there were probably hundreds of billions of dollars spent on, you know, startup companies.
Oh, yes.
And if you look what was left out of the wreckage of all that, you ended up with about five big companies, you know, Amazon, eBay, you know, a few others. But there was just a tremendous amount of wreckage along the way. I predict there's going to be a lot of wreckage along the way with urban mobility.
Yeah. It's just an interesting concept to contemplate because, if it does happen to any great degree, I mean, that makes a lot of people GA pilots, right? I mean, if suddenly they...
I think more GA passengers. It's going to be autonomous.
I agree. I think it's going to be more passengers than pilots.
Yeah, you don't think we'll have automated self-driving
unmanned aerial vehicles.
Oh, I think we will.
I think we parked will. Parked in our driveways or on
but,
our...
But Launchpad's point is you won't need someone who's a certificated pilot.
Yeah. To fly it. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And we've seen that. Let me bring that to round. Real quick, if you look at the UAV programs, the Air Force's autonomous programs, their ground stations have a pilot station that has a six-pack, a joystick, a throttle quadrant, and pedals. You look at the Army's, the same airframe UAS, the Army one.
Yeah.
Oh, no. He's got a mouse, and, it's like he's pucking points and telling the aircraft to go there and is not a rated pilot and doesn't have a way of directly controlling the aircraft.
Hmm. All right. Well, maybe we'll start to wrap this up.
I've got one question as we wrap this up.
Okay.
And Max East, as this is your another motorcycle driving by, Max East is So what haven't you seen that you need to see here at Sun and Fun? Because you're the new guy. We've all seen all this stuff, or at least tried to when I can get out of my booth.
Yeah, I think that I've mostly concentrated on this area close by where we are, but there are a lot of things that are a little bit farther away. I've finally, I think, gotten myself oriented enough so that I'm not getting lost or aimlessly wandering trying to get from one place to another. I think I've sort of figured it out.
Where are you now? I'm at the F-14.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, right. So yeah, I think I want to get more into the LSA area out there. There's a lot of gyrocopters. And interesting flying machines out there that I'm interested in. I sort of like this idea. This is kind of crazy because I can't really envision myself doing this, but I sort of like this idea of this this open cockpit kinds of things. Some of these gyrocopters and some of these other things, like some of the
we refer to them as trikes. The
trikes, yeah, all of that. The what's the one out here? It's not the Long Easy, but those kind of things where you're those kind of things where you're sitting out there, kind of perched, in the airplane.
That would be a breezy. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
we'll find you a picture to post on the net.
Okay,
for that.
Okay. But that seems just like real, wind in your face kind of aviation. Now, the reason I can't imagine myself actually doing that is I'm sort of scared of heights, so and just to be sitting in this cockpit that's not much more than a seat with some tubing holding the seat up and you looking at the ground below. I know a complete an enclosed cockpit is sort of a false sense of security.
Sure.
But for me it is one anyway.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to come back out to, we call it Paradise City out here where Pipistrel is located and all our brethren out
there. Why is it called Paradise City?
It goes, we'd have to go way back from when the hang gliders used to hang out there and the ultralights.
Okay.
Because it was a completely different fair there, and now it's the LSAs and some of the ultralights. But what separates Sun and Fun from all the other fly-ins and trade shows is that we have a 1,000-foot grass strip and can fly during the show. So just like I did with you two, I can put you. You can go out there and get rides from these guys.
Yeah, yeah, exciting.
Hey, I just want to make one quick comment about here. This has got to be the best place to do a live production. We're sitting out here on the deck. We have this tremendous breeze going. We're surrounded by trees and pilots. This is just a fantastic environment. I'm loving it.
Yeah, we owe a lot to Sun and Fun Radio for granting us permission to use their facilities.
Absolutely.
Shout out to Dave Shellbetter and the entire Sun and Fun radio crew at 1510 AM and live on ATC.net.
Very good. Yes, on ATC.net. We should mention that. Yes. So, all right. We want to thank you for listening to this live edition of the Airplane Geeks podcast. If you're interested in learning more about the show, we have a webpage, of course, and that is just simply airplanegeeks.com. You can visit the show there. So thanks for listening. We really appreciate it.
It's
So there it is, our first ever live show. Thank you for listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast, and you can find us at airplanegeeks.com. You can email us at thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com, and you can subscribe to this podcast through your favorite podcast app or on Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, and Pandora. So please join us again next time as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.